Good evening. To some sort of half fire glow faces over there, and some nicer, brighter faces here, and some hints of silhouettes elsewhere. I trust you're all there. So we're really getting into the heart of the retreat now. You've already put in much skillful effort to establish some steadiness and mindfulness and to work with some of the difficult mind states that will unfortunately doubtlessly have arisen. And there's Jeremy Logan, a teacher some of you know, describes this part of the retreat. He says it's a bit like one of the old tractors on the farm where he grew up. And to get the tractor going, it had the two engines. And the first engine you had to manually crank up, and it took a lot of effort and a lot of physical work. But once it got going and it cranked up, it got the big engine going, then the engine just sort of purred along, and it didn't really require so much input after that. So it's a bit like we've done the cranking and now we can get to really tune into the benefit of having done that work. We can start to investigate some of the more subtle movements of the mind, some of the subtle, wholesome and beneficial qualities of the mind that can be cultivated and honed for insight. I'll talk to some of these tonight. Some of the qualities of mind associated with the awakening of the mind. And so the talks that Jill and I have given to date, apart from last, whenever Jill spoke at the Brahma Vihara a couple of nights ago, were focused a bit on the difficult mind states that arise. And in our retreats, we're particularly focused on the teachings of establishing mindfulness and understanding the causes of suffering. We practice opening to rather than avoiding the suffering. We look into and start to understand that which adds to or compounds suffering, and that which allows a releasing, an opening, a letting go of the reactivity for the suffering, a release of the clinging. And this is a primary practice and a path for insight and is core to developing our understand and waking up to the true nature of things. However, one thing that we may notice at times, and certainly in my own practice, is a negativity bias of the mind. And it would often lead me to being drawn more habitually to investigating the difficult and to looking for the difficult and searching out the difficult and not allowing or noticing or familiarising myself with some of the more wholesome qualities of the mind and of the growing capacity of the mind and the heart to be awake. By way of example, when I first heard of the seven awakening factors, I remember thinking, well, they're not relevant to me. I had so much suffering to attend to before I could even consider any factors that might be associated with an awakening mind. As opposed to appreciating the benefits of orienting the attention towards these qualities. And particularly at the times when there's even a brief window of absence of the hindrances. So firstly, I think it's worth reflecting on how we get to know and how we get to understand mental states and qualities of the mind. And then we can reflect on this with how we got to know and how we get to know and continue to get to know the hindrances. So in our practice, and especially on retreats, we practice returning again and again to the present moment, being aware of what arises in our awareness in any moment. And in particular, we cultivate mindfulness of the body and breath to ground our attention and experience in life directly, rather than through the conceptual or the reactive mind. So we're really interested in the direct experience in the moment. And of course, it's also useful to apply the teachings to our experiences. And so as part of our training in mindfulness, we're offered key teachings to integrate and explore within our experience. So for example, we've been exploring the five hindrances: desire and aversion, restlessness and worry, sloth and torpor, and doubt. And as we become more and more familiar with them in our practice, we get to recognise them more readily and when they arise. We see them, we get to know them, we get to work with them, and then we get to enjoy their passing and their absence. No, that's just one sentence, and that's not the experience. It doesn't last the sentence, but that's the arc of the practice around the hindrances. So the first point is to get to know them, and we can only get to know them through directly experiencing them with mindfulness. So while we may be able to recite what the hindrances are, it's only through knowing them from our own experience, you know, getting curious about them and working with them, that we become more skillful in developing our practice. And so similarly it will be for the awakening factors, which I'm going to talk to tonight. It's useful to get to know them conceptually, you know, from memory, so we can inquire into their presence and our experience. But we don't need to strive to remember them. It's through getting to know them from the inside out, from recognising them and experiencing them directly, that the transforming qualities are revealed. So I was thinking about this quality of getting to know the mind states. I think it was last night we had another yummy soup, and it had lots of ginger in it. And I noticed that I was finding it difficult to tell when it was a good temperature to drink it. Was it temperature hot or was it spicy hot? Mm-hmm. And what degree of each? And I really couldn't tell. And so I put the soup on the spoon and waited for it to cool down a bit and tried it, and I still didn't know. Is that a good temperature to drink it? Or is it just spicy hot, or is it temperature hot? You know, so I tried a bit on the lips. I resisted putting my finger in it. But I noticed there was a really sort of receptive and engaged curiosity. You know, it reminds me of the attitude that can support our exploration of the mind states. It's really sort of really, really curious. It also reminded me of a slight tangent, but of a story of my older brother, who when he was about 3 or 4, I understand, he's older than me, my mother had offered him a piece of crystallised ginger to eat. And he took a wee bite, put it down and ran outside. And then he came back a few minutes later and he had another little bite and he ran outside again. So when he came back the third time, my mother asked him what he was doing. And he said he was waiting for it to cool down. So, you know, it's that quality. Until we really investigate and understand something, then we don't know what a skillful response to it is. And so part of our training is how to bring our awareness to support some of the not-so-subtle mind states, like the hindrances. The sort of almost like large mind states, don't they? But also to these more subtle mind states, some of the more subtle, wholesome mind states and mental qualities that become more evident when we're temporarily free of the hindrances or the other afflictive states. So these awakening factors, qualities of mind, are described in the Satipatthana Sutta as the 7 awakening factors. And they are mindfulness, investigation of dharmas, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, and equipoise or equanimity. So as I said, don't feel like you need to remember them, and we'll talk to each of these probably at some stage during the retreat. And so we're particularly interested in turning our awareness to the conditions that lead to the arising of awakening factor and those that will further strengthen it. And so the first of these qualities is one that we've talked about a lot already on retreat, and this is the quality of mindfulness or sati. You know, it's central to much of our insight tradition. and it is the one awakening factor that is its development is beneficial at any time and on all occasions. You know, so if in doubt, practice mindfulness. Now, as soon as we explore our experience in the present moment, we are cultivating mindfulness. And I thought I'd just talk about this a little bit more first. It's worth commenting here that in this retreat, as on most retreats, Jill and I have been offering both a sequential path and different aspects of the teaching that can assist in developing insight and understanding. And I'd encourage you at any time that you feel confused about what to do, as Jill actually suggested in the instructions this morning when we were investigating the mindfulness of the mind, to return to the simplicity of the breathing or the body sensations or the sounds, to cultivate some more steadiness and to allow a more contained or sort of bounded mindfulness. It's a good practice to do that any time that we're confused, overwhelmed, unsure, analysing, getting lost in our heads. Just coming back to the simplicity of the practice. In the last retreat I was teaching, the image to remind me of this came to mind, of creating a grassy path, a path along the grass in a garden. So it's like going into a garden. Coming into our minds can be a bit like going into a wild veggie garden or a wild garden that hasn't been looked after, hasn't been maintained. We can't really see the vegetables for the weeds. There's the unpruned fruit trees everywhere. There's other weedy trees around. It's really hard to see what is what. What we want to keep and what we don't want to keep. And it can be pretty overwhelming and disheartening, and we might just decide to go down to the pub instead. So what can be helpful to support us to stay present with that wild garden is to create some space. And in the garden, perhaps to create somewhere where you can walk easily without having to trip over things or wonder if you're squashing something. So it might be like creating a small track of lawn in the garden where you can just walk up and down easily. And as we walk and the path gets a bit more trodden, we create a bit of a sense of calm and ease. You know, maybe the pleasant experience of the bare feet on the lawn. You sort of come more directly into the being in the garden. And it's really important at this point to note that we don't want to turn the whole garden into a lawn. We're not trying to get rid of the garden just as it is. But we want to cultivate an easeful, spacious area where we can see what else is present in the garden. You know, so too in cultivating the mindfulness of the breath or mindfulness of the body. When we come on retreat or sit down to practice, we notice that things have got a bit overgrown, we can't really see what's going on, we haven't got clarity. So just initially bringing our attention back again and again to the mindfulness of the body. And as the stability develops and there's less distractedness, there's more steadiness, we can broaden the mindfulness out without getting too entangled. And so as we have on this retreat, through the body sensations and the Vedana, the mind, and then in turn the mind activities, but we can always return to our sort of primary stabilising practice. And so the sati is an awakening factor. We can see it especially as Vico Analio describes it, as a keen interest, an open receptivity, as well as a balanced and unbiased observation. That's nice, isn't it? A keen interest, an open receptivity, as well as a balanced and unbiased observation. It refers to the qualities of being a soft, awake presence, referring to the receptive inner wakefulness and being fully in the present moment. And so the second of the awakening factors of investigation was also talked to right from Jill's first talk, this pairing of mindfulness and investigation. There's a deepening of our curiosity or interest in our subjective experience in the moment. So So deepening our curiosity or interest in our subjective experience in the moment. And it's particularly useful for exploring the conditions of our mind. Exploring as to whether our experience is wholesome and skillful for progress on the path, or to recognise what is unwholesome or unskillful. And this is a nuanced and ongoing practice. And it's not an interrogation. It's not sort of a finger-pointing investigation to try and work it out. It's still got this quality of curiosity and also that sense of receptivity. An interrogation tends to be unkind, and it tends to lead to self-doubt. So we want more of a supported exploration. And we don't want to sort of have an investigation that's full of big ideas or intellectual concepts that will take us away from the soft, awake, embodied presence. We want to find that balance of investigating and maintaining that sense of connection, grounded, a soft, awake, receptive, embodied presence. And this factor of investigation reminds us that for awakening, we need more than just calm. You know, it can be a lovely thing when we come on a retreat, can't it, to actually establish some calm. And it can be pretty tempting just to try and keep that, hold on to that. But we need interest and curiosity, investigation about what is taking place within and around us, the conditions and what's taking place within us. Amongst the steadiness and collectedness we develop through our practice, we want to be curious to know more deeply, to be able to investigate into the condition of our own mind and discern what is wholesome or skillful and that which is not beneficial and leads to more suffering. And we've explored this, you know, particularly with the hindrances and as well as Jill last night regarding the afflictive states and some of the painful beliefs and ways we construct a sense of self. And so continuing on from the mindfulness and the investigation, the third factor to explore tonight is one of energy, or virya is the word in Pali. And Bhikkhu Anālayo again says, establishing an attitude of inquisitiveness for investigation within requires some persistence. A sustaining of investigation is needed in order for genuine progress to unfold. So what sustains such investigation is the next awakening factor of energy. And so the energy mentioned in these instructions does not refer to the vital energy in the body of living beings. Instead, energy in this context stands for persistence, in the sense of an active and continuous engagement with what we are doing and experiencing. An active and continuous engagement. And we aspire towards such energy to be unshaken. So it confirms the importance of perseverance, of keeping with the task at hand, as a central nuance of energy as an awakening factor. And this takes both a bodily and a mental dimension. So investigation, the curiosity into the experience, into the wholesome and the unwholesome, leads to energy. And we can be aware of this linear progression as mindfulness establishes and we bring curiosity to experience. And then we start to see more clearly, don't we, that which is skillful and that which isn't. We can start to feel a little more energised and a little more perhaps motivated for the practice. You may have noticed that over these days. There may not be quite so much trudging into the hall, the meditation hall or the time watching until the lunch or the dinner, or goodness me, when can I put my head on that pillow? So maybe just a little more interest and energy and motivation for the practice. And this energy is said to be in direct opposition to the hindrances of sloth and torpor. And so similarly, you may have noticed that sloth and torpor that might have been strong for you at times in the first 2 or 3 days may be dwindling now. In that place, there might be a little more motivation, a little more energy at times. And of course, we can also develop skills in how we bring energy to the practice, applying energy or effort with continuity. So as Jill's talked about, not just in the sitting and then in the walking, but also in the in-betweening. And again, you may have noticed how at times, perhaps when you've set aside a segment to really bring attention to that continuity of practice as you've moved between the different activities of the cultivation and mindfulness, cultivation of mindfulness and investigation, keeping them active, that maybe this has really supported your practice too. So one of the investigations that we have really is how do we sustain this energy in a way that's not exhausting? As Sayadaw Utejaneer said when he was here, he said, we need to practice in a relaxed way. Which I latched on to, but then he says, but don't stop practicing. So it's that lovely relaxed diligence that Jill talks of. To practice in a relaxed way, but don't stop practicing. You know, so it can be useful to remind ourselves, actually, how effortless it is to be present. You know, maybe just taking this moment to be aware that we are hearing. To be aware of sounds in general. Maybe just taking a moment to feel the body move with the breath right now. You know, it's a very light amount of effort, isn't it? It's almost effortless. And so there we can get that sense of that relaxed quality. And the effort more becomes in just remembering to keep doing that. To do so with patience and perseverance. At other times, of course, it can feel a little more like heroic effort to keep the attention on the wild storm of a hindrance or an afflictive mind state. But still, it's that same the amount of effort that's required is just to remember and then to be present. And when we start to feel the benefit of that, then the motivation continues to increase. And to be completely honest here, my notes in front of me say, tidy this section up here. A little more effort might have been great. The one thing I wanted to turn to, which I think this point was telling me, was to another way that we can help keep the energy going and help keep the effort there to help us, to remind us to stay present and to keep motivated. And Jill has talked to these of some of the questions that we can drop into our practice at times. Just like, am I aware? What am I aware of? What am I aware of in the body, in the heart, in the mind? What is the attitude of the mind? All useful questions, those sort of questions that just almost pause us in the tracks and turn us inward, curiosity and interest. In a way that we can sustain this energy and interest, in the painful or with the pleasant. And so the other factor of the 7 factors I want to talk to tonight is the factor of joy or pity. And I'll talk about the quality of joy as an awakening factor, which arises as a result of mindful investigation, which we've been talking about, sustained by this energy that I've been talking about. But first I want to talk about joy more generally. Partly because it's just a very nice thing to talk about. But also it's actually really helpful for our practice. And it can be very helpful to explore our relationship to joy. More generally, both in the responses to our inner states of mind, which I'll return to more shortly, but does any joy arouse through the senses as well? And some of you may be familiar with the Awakening Joy course that James Farrers has developed. James is a Dharma teacher, Jill also knows, in California. And he first visited Aotearoa about 10 years ago and did a day-long for us down in Otohatahi in Christchurch. In fact, he came just a year or so after the earthquakes down there. And we were sort of like, awakening joy, really? We just kind of want to survive. But actually, it was an incredibly helpful orientation for us all at the time. And I understand that James developed this Awakening Joy course as he realised his own practice and in retreatants that he'd worked with, that this sort of strong negativity bias is a sort of misinterpretation of the teachings. And it meant that the practice had become a bit dry and tended towards focus more on suffering and tended to result in feeling a bit grim. And when one feels a bit grim, the motivation's not great to continue the practice. So he developed this course with a foundation of mindfulness and an inclining of the mind towards joy. He then explored practicing and familiarising ourselves with joyful states, and then getting to know what distracts or hinders joy and what deepens and broadens our joy. So it's a pretty nice curriculum, really. And so we did practices like gratitude, you know, bringing to mind things in our everyday lives that we are grateful for. And then taking the time to feel the experience of that gratitude in our hearts and our bodies. And so we become more familiar with the embodied sense of gratitude. And as we do that, we pave the way for that to arise more often. And we also practice something called taking in the good. So in a moment during the day, looked here, might have been, you know, the sun coming out after the cloudy morning, cool morning. Maybe it's the Tui song or the Moorpork at night. Or it might be the Tui doing some of its crazy acrobatics in the kōwhai trees around here. It might be the sort of fighter jet type flight of the swallows as they dart around. Nor even the tenderness of seeing the swallows up on their wee perches, roosting on their perches. And so when we become aware of one of these moments, we pause for some seconds and feel into the body, noticing how that feels, familiarising ourselves with the very experience of joy. And you might like to do that now as you remember something from the day that brought you joy. Maybe feeling that into the body and allowing it to expand. Mm-hmm. Breathing into it. Savouring it. An embodied experience of joy. And just become familiar with what that joy feels like in the body. And in the mind. Does anyone have any words for that? Anyone who's been lucky enough to feel some joy in this moment? Anyone got any sense of what that's like physically?
Light bubbles.
Light bubbles. Beautiful. Light bubbles. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, everyone else is feeling grim. But we'll go with the light bubbles.
I say joyful?
Joyful, you feel joyful. Yeah.
It's not very original, but it was good.
Yeah. And so it's useful, isn't it, to notice joyful, and then as we feel into that, how would we describe that to someone else? I feel joyful. Is there a lightness in the mind?
Expansion.
Lovely. Great. Warmth. A sense of expansion. Warmth. Beautiful.
Pleasant.
Yeah, pleasant.
Uplifted.
Nice.
An inner smile.
An inner smile. Beautiful. An loose. Inner smile.
Loose rather than tight.
Loose rather than tight. Oh, great. Isn't it lovely just to hear these words? I can feel the feeling of it. Yeah, great. Wonderful. So familiarising ourselves with that sense of joy in the body. Here we go, I had written down, uplift, bubbling up, light, spacious, smiling, fizzing up with warmth into the face. Yeah. And it can also be worthwhile noticing that the word joy can sometimes get in the way. Sometimes language gets in the way for us, and sometimes words such as sort of deep well-being or contentment or happiness can just sort of help us explore the territory of joy. And so these cultivations of noticing and feeling into the body during moments of joy increases our familiarity, and so we can more readily recognise it and open to it when it's present. We don't want to miss it. James Barr has often said that. Don't miss it! Yeah, don't miss it. Well, I was doing the Awakening Joy course. I went on did the Otago Rail Trail. You have done that, a beautiful trail where the railway line used to go from central Otago down towards Dunedin. And so as well as soaking in the wonder of central Otago in autumn and the sheer delight I have whenever I'm on my bicycle, the lovely joys of physical senses, I was also intentionally frequently reflecting on the absence of stressful situations. So I'd just come from a period of being involved in a complex environment court case as part of my ecology work, and with that there's associated all sorts of torturous mind states of doubt and self-doubt and doubt and restlessness and anxiety. And so while I was on this bike trail, I just kept turning the attention to the absence of these mind states. And just notice what an incredibly relaxing and joyful effect that had, especially as I intentionally savoured this. And I also noticed that the inclining of the mind towards joy seemed to somehow reduce the occurrence or severity of reactive mind states occurring. You know, when we encountered, inevitable moments of difficulties and hills and rain and double bookings and those sort of things. But I noticed that the reflective mind states had really settled and weren't inclined to arise. So in the awakening factors with joy, we're not focused on the joy from sensual pleasures, of sights, of sounds, of smells, sensations and so on. We're more particularly interested in the joy that arises or that can be aroused when we recognise the absence of the hindrances. When a hindrance has passed, or in any moment of present, when we notice the lack of the mind entangled in hindrances or a hindrance. So on Tuesday night, when I was talking about the hindrances, I shared one of the similes from the teachings on the hindrances, with each of the hindrances, how each of the hindrances would affect a clear bowl of water, if we wanted to use it as a mirror for our own reflection. I talked about the dye of desire, the algae of sloth and torpor, and so on. And then there's a second set of similes used by the Buddha to illustrate the absence of the hindrances in the mind and the relief of that. And so according to this set of hindrances, to be free from sensual desire is like being relieved from a debt. To be free from aversion is like recovering from physical illness. To be unobstructed by sloth and torpor is akin to being released from prison. To be free from the agitation of restlessness and worry was like being liberated from slavery. And to overcome doubt resembles crossing a dangerous desert safely. So these senses of relief, of release and relief. Now again, it's like that A, the ah of Bella. Ah, appreciating the absence. Being relieved from a debt. There's the joy in that. So in the awakening factors, Bhikkhu Anālayo says the combination of being mindful, having an inquisitive attitude, and the sustaining support of active engagement leads up to a wholesome type of joy, piti. The joy mentioned here relates to the subtle joy of being in the present moment that can grow into the awakening factor of joy. And he says this circumscribes the kind of joy that can serve as an awakening factor. Rejoicing in the temporary absence of the hindrances from the mind would be a good example of a type of joy that fits this case. And just really noticing that word temporarily. You know, we don't think we need to have conquered the hindrances once and for all, banish them from our minds. It's just this temporary absence. Bhikkhu Anālayo also talks of the importance of joy so we can enjoy our practice. He said on a retreat I was on with him a couple of years ago, never miss out on joy that is possible. Rejoice in one's own wholesome actions and the conditions of mind and being in the present moment. These are the subtle joy of being in the present moment that will mature into the awakening factor of joy. And as Ram Dass said when he was asked to summarise the secret of joy and contentment, he replied, plumb the depths of this moment. Plumb the depths of this moment. He didn't say go running around chasing sense pleasures. He said plumb the depths of the moment. The awakening factors. We have mindfulness, which is the foundation of the awakening factors. And then we have what are energizing qualities that I've spoken to tonight, of investigation, of energy, and of joy. And then there's the calming qualities of the other three awakening factors, of tranquility, of samadhi, and of equanimity. So those latter three awakening factors provide a calming balance to the energizing aspects of the first three. And so that particularly with joy that can become excited and energetic, it can be balanced by tranquility. So the joy remains sort of light and suffused through us. Bhikkhu Anālayo again says, intentional arousing of the first awakening factors up to joy, that I've been talking about tonight, can build the foundation for a natural progression that sets in once joy is established, with then only a need to monitor that this natural progression through tranquility and concentration culminates in equipoise or equanimity. So based on mindful investigation that is sustained by energy, the intentional arousing of joy seems to be a key factor in this whole sequential building up of the awakening factors. There's some good encouragement to arouse this factor of joy. So these refined qualities of mind of the awakening factors are very important to our practice. And very useful to start exploring early in our practice. Now, of course, over time they become more refined and nuanced, but getting a taste for them really helps maintain the motivation for practice and to orient our mind towards the skillful qualities. And then as they become more refined, we can more deeply understand the impermanent and the imperfect nature of experience, and further deconstruct the limiting, conceptualizing tendencies of the mind. And for the sake of joy, I thought I'd finish with a poem, which can bring some of that quality of contentment and joy through its words. So it's a poem that many of you may know. It's called The Peace of Wild Things by Wendell Berry. And it may mirror some of the experiences that some of you have been having on retreat. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake at night at the least sound, in fear of what my life or my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things, who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water and feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their lights. For a while, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. Let's just sit for a moment.